Time now for Surf and Turf. Thursdays at this time, we get reports from our oceans guy, Boris Worm, or about the rest of the Wild Kingdom from Andrew Hebda at the Museum of Natural History. And this week, another dispatch from the Western Pacific and some of the most biodiverse ocean waters in the world.
Under the sea, darling, it's better down where it's wetter, take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day, out in the sun, they slave away.
Boris Worm studies the oceans at Dalhousie University. He's currently traveling and working in the Western Pacific, and we reached him earlier in Noumea in French Caledonia. Hi, Boris.
Hi, Stephanie.
Where is French Caledonia, and what's it like?
It's about halfway between Australia and Fiji, right in the middle of the Western Pacific Ocean. And, well, people used to eat each other here until the 1920s. Some occurrence of cannibalism were there. And there's this bizarre fauna, a lot of which only occurs here. So this morning, for example, I almost stumbled over almost 10-inch long grasshopper, giant grasshopper that feeds on palm leaves.
Can I just interrupt for a moment? Did you say that people ate each other there as recently as the 1920s?
Yeah, that was the last occurrence of cannibalism. Cannibalism was very common here. It was kind of a staple food, it appears, so they're actually catching people and holding them in cages, as it were, and then eat them. And they had a kind of a custom of not doing too much of that, like we have in fishery, a maximum sustainable yield. They would only take a few prisoners because they knew they couldn't deplete the other tribes so badly. They had to leave some for the future, as it were.
Wow. And so in studying the ocean there, what have you been finding?
Okay, so, I mean, the ocean here is the most interesting and important thing also to the local economy. It's just so rich, like Rajampat, where I talked about last week. It's an area where there's thousands of species. We're studying the species richness of reef fish here in various habitats. And although from this particular place there's already about 1,000 species described, we're still finding new species. Like just yesterday, I found a species that was in none of the books, and you just shrug your shoulders and you go, well, there's probably another one. And you know, you would describe it, but that takes a very long time to do that formally. So it's just written down as unknown species.
What was it like, what you found?
Oh, you know, it was just small. Most reef fish are really small and they hide. So, you know, when you think of the colorful fish that, you know, go above the reef and swim around, well, that's only a small fraction of what's actually there. The reef is like a maze, and it has all these little channels, and small bitty fish hide in there, and they come in all shapes and sizes and colors, and a lot of them are unknown to science. And so this was one that came from inside the reef, and it's called a blenny, and it's a, you know, maybe 3-4-inch fish with, you know, big bulbous eyes, and they're all kind of timid looking, and with good reason, because apparently they're eaten at an incredibly fast rate. They're like kind of the peanuts of the reef. They sustain a lot of the larger fish that then sustain still larger fish like tuna, which come by, or other fish like sharks, which feed on the species there. So it's an incredibly interesting place to study as a biologist.
How many of the species that you're seeing are fished?
A number of them are fished, I mean, and have been for a long time. I was at the fish market here recently, and I saw maybe 30, 40 species there on display, which is quite a bit more than Nova Scotia, where we maybe have a handful of species that you see regularly. But then for every species that's fished, you have like 30 or 40 other species that are not fished, but are mostly small. So it's a number of reef fish that are taken, but also tuna and marlins and pelagic open water fish like that.
How healthy is the state of the fishery there?
The reef fisheries for those, you know, colorful reef fish, they are in various places there in different states, depending how many people live there and how careful they are about it. But then of more international importance are the big tuna fisheries. And this is something we I think can hardly imagine the scale of which this happens. This is across thousands and thousands of kilometers of ocean. There's these large boats operating day and night, 365 days a year, and taking a variety of tuna species, millions of tons a year. This is some of the largest fishery ever, counting the cod fishery and all the great fisheries of the past in the Atlantic. And it's unclear to me how well it's sustained, and various fisheries are healthy and others are not doing so well.
So will the tuna go the way of the cod then?
Well, you know, I have to think of cod a lot, because tuna here is a staple like cod was in the Atlantic. It's something that, you know, almost everyone has had. It's a staple food that sustains the economy of a lot of the small island nations around. So this area here is subsidized by France, so people are not relying on the fisheries that much. But there, just north of here, is the small island nation of Vanuatu. And then there's lots of other, you know, very small developing nation with a lot of poverty that rely on the tuna fishery, much like our coastal communities relied on the cod fishery. And the fisheries are in various state. The larger tuna are certainly being depleted, like bluefin tuna, southern bluefin tuna, Pacific bluefin tuna, just like in the Atlantic, is at very, very low levels and not recovering. But then it appears that the smaller species, like skipjack, which is mostly turned into canned tuna, is doing relatively well, possibly because the larger species which prey on skipjack have been depleted that much. This is like herring in our waters, which have increased after the cod collapsed. And so that species now sustains most of the fishing. It's at 2 million tons or so a year, the third largest fishery in the world. And what concerns me is that there's very few people working on it. There's a handful of people concerned with managing it. And it's you know, one of the greatest assets of the planet, one of the largest fisheries we have. And I think we should be very careful about it.
Is there something bigger happening? Are people there rethinking how we treat the ocean?
Well, there are some encouraging signs. So what I do see is that nations here, particularly the, you know, small developing nations, are starting to work together, because they are concerned about foreign overfishing, foreign boats coming in basically pillaging their waters. So they're setting up these protected or areas or no-take areas between their nations in international waters, but they can do that because the boats have to go through their national waters in order to get to those pockets of the high seas. So they have some innovative ways of protecting them. They're starting to have better enforcement and 100% monitoring of those large boats that come in from Asia and Europe and North America and all the different places around the world. And they're trying to make sure that something's left for the future. And that reminded me of where I was in Rajampat last week, where, you know, people increasingly take charge of their destiny, it seems, and they start to see the ocean as the key asset in their life, and a healthy ocean, as it were, and they're trying to manage it for the future. And so I think that's the way we're going, and not just for cod and tuna, but also for, you know, some of those more bizarre and unknown species that we're seeing, that are all part of this ecosystem that makes this place so unique and so special, and, you know, that's part of our blue planet.
So is there a lesson for Nova Scotia in what's happening there, or is it more likely that they could learn a lot from what's happened here?
I think it goes both ways. We can learn from the mistakes of the past, but we also can look at some of these places, you know, who are using really innovative approaches to protect species and make sure they'll still be around tomorrow.
Boris, thanks for this.
Good talking to you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Boris Worm, our oceans guy. Next week on Surf and Turf, some turf talk with Andrew Hebda from the Nova Scotia Museum of Natural History.